case for argument, United States versus Abimbola Amu. Mr. Meyer.
May it please the court, John Meyer for the defendant, Kafiat Abimbola Amu. The first issue I'd like to address is the issue of the burden of proof, that is, whether the defendant met her burden of proof as far as showing that this foreign incarceration in Nigeria was probable as required.
Well, when you say probable, I think one question that's before us, assuming, of course, we resolve this as a question whether the district court understood the scope of his discretion under the guidelines, et cetera. But a big question is by what does probable mean? Because if it means by a preponderance, you have, as the government's argued, another level of the government's argument to overcome, namely, has she shown that it is more likely than not that she will be swept into this Decree 33 situation, either pre-conviction detention or actual conviction?
You're correct, Your Honor. That is, probable is a term of art, meaning more likely than not.
When so you accept that you need to show that it was more likely than not?
Absolutely. And that is a definition of probable. And when the district court used the term probable, it made the required finding. In fact, it went beyond the required finding of probable or more likely than not when the district court held that incarceration in Nigeria was a substantial likelihood. That is a threshold above and beyond probable or more likely than not. So,
well, the truth is I'm not sure if that's what he meant by that, but I mean, it may be that if we can't tell what he meant, we would need to send it back and ask him. But I find his discussion vague on this point.
Well, I would disagree, Your Honor. Judge Holderman used the term substantial likelihood three separate times in discussing whether or not the defendant had met her burden. I don't think there's any mistake here as to the way Judge Holderman viewed the evidence. That is, I think he found that it was a likely probability that Ms. Amu would face an additional 5 years or even beyond 5 years if you counted pretrial detention in Nigeria. So I don't believe there was any confusion on Judge Holderman's part in this case. I think the confusion arose, or the error arose, when Judge Holderman then decided, well, what quantum of evidence is necessary for the defendant to produce to meet the preponderance standard? And that's where the error occurred. As far as moving on to the actual issue of departure, after Judge Holderman ruled that there was a substantial likelihood that Ms. Amu would be incarcerated in Nigeria for an additional 5 years for no reason other than her instant conviction in this case, he concluded, and I would suggest this is correct, that it's an unmentioned factor in the guidelines. That is, this is not discussed as a basis for departure anywhere in the guidelines.
Why isn't the right analogy to other situations that we deal with all the time in terms of prosecution by other sovereigns, namely states? We see this constantly, in fact, if there are state prosecutions. Is there any reason to distinguish state from foreign prosecutions?
Absolutely not. That is, and I think the cases and the guidelines address this issue as a favored grounds for departure. That is, when a defendant is facing additional penalties in state court that flow from the federal conviction, well, the district court is entitled entitled then to look at that issue and say, well, gee whiz, just because this individual is facing additional time in state court, this is something we can look at in deciding whether there should be a departure. Because I think the guidelines are founded, and the cases that have dealt with this issue, are founded on the fact that when somebody faces additional penalties or additional time in jail solely because of their federal conviction, that this is unfair. That is, that we should account for this factor and possibly grant a motion for a down.
That's where the judge exercises his or her discretion to determining whether or not that makes any difference. Isn't that really what happened here?
No. What happened here is, first of all, Judge Holderman decided that foreign incarceration flowing from this conviction was a prohibited factor.
Well, he didn't say that.
Well, what he said was, if the Sentencing Commission were to consider this, they would say this is an issue that should not be considered by a district court. I would suggest that's equivalent to saying this is a forbidden or a prohibited factor. In fact, you can see from Judge Holderman's analysis that it was based on a prediction of what the Sentencing Commission would do. That is, if the Sentencing Commission had looked at this matter, looked at this factor, they would say, as the district court analogized, similar to national origin or race, and can never be considered. That's the analysis that Judge Holderman engaged in, and I think that was error. Even Judge Holderman, even if you were to consider Judge Holderman's ruling as to whether or not this factor took the case out of the heartlands, again, that goes to whether or not the district court believed it had authority to depart. And again, that is legal error because, as I think I've just mentioned, consequences that flow from a federal conviction have been upheld as grounds for departure and are specifically mentioned as grounds for departure in the guidelines. Therefore, Judge Holderman further erred when he said, this factor does not take it out of the heartlands. And I would suggest it makes no difference whether an individual is facing additional time in a foreign jail or a state jail, because the focus of the departure should be on whether or not it has an impact on the defendant, that is, an adverse impact. So I suggest for all these reasons that Judge Holderman was incorrect in his legal analysis in this case.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Meyer. Ms. Sorensen?
May it please the Court, Juliet Sorensen on behalf of the United States. The defendant.
So when the defendant filed this motion for downward departure, what was the government's response?
The government opposed the motion for the downward departure in the district court, and the defendant.
On what ground?
On the grounds that Nigeria is a separate sovereign and the
yeah,
law.
I know, but did you say that it was impermissible ground, or that the judge should not exercise his discretion favorably to the defendant?
Your Honor, I would have to go back and double check the record, but as I recall, our position was that it was not that it was an impermissible ground per se, but that there was no basis for a certainty that the defendant would be subject to future incarceration in Nigeria, and for that reason the court should exercise its discretion in denying the motion to depart.
Wouldn't it be helpful in cases like this, after the judge refused the departure, if the government would ask the judge to make clear whether he was ruling as a matter of law or simply in the exercise of his discretion? Because it's very unclear from what he said.
It would indeed, Your Honor.
Do you ever do that? Why do we have these appeals? I don't understand. Why should there ever be any doubt as to what the judge is doing?
It seems to me that based on the record, although it is slightly ambiguous.
No, it's not slightly ambiguous. It's radically ambiguous. And we have these cases time and time again. This seems so gratuitous that we should have to wrestle with this issue when a simple question from a lawyer would enable the judge to make clear what his view was.
I agree, Your Honor. Judge Holderman, in this case, did say unequivocally that the defendant had not proven future incarceration by a preponderance of the evidence.
Well, Ms. Sorensen, I can tell you some of your colleagues do ask that very question that Judge Posner, and it made our job much easier and makes the record very clear, because you've got it right there. If they say, oh, I'm exercising my discretion, that's the end of the game.
I certainly appreciate that from the perspective of the Court of Appeals. In this case, however, I would say that it is clear that the district court exercised his discretion. But I believe that defendant's emphasis on the burden of proof is misplaced for precisely that reason. This court.
But wait a minute. I mean, it seems to me the government, to go back to the other point, got off on the wrong track in its brief by talking about double jeopardy principles. Everybody knows that Nigeria is a separate sovereign from the United States, and everybody, for that matter, knows that Illinois is a separate sovereign from the United States. And under the Supreme Court's decision in Coon, it's absolutely clear that you can have a discretionary downward departure based on successive state and federal prosecutions, despite the well-established double jeopardy rules. I don't see why that rule should be different for foreign governments. Now, obviously, whether a judge chooses to exercise his discretion is another issue. As for the preponderance standard, I find this, as I said to Mr. Meyer, an extraordinarily muddled presentation. Sometimes it looks like he is talking about preponderances. Sometimes it looks like he isn't. You know, it's very hard to tell.
I think that's correct, Your Honor. However, I believe that musings on the record as to the Sentencing Commission and the Court of Appeals is simply hypothetical musing, which is...
Well, how do we know? Why don't we have to send this back and tell Judge Holderman, number one, you do have the discretion, and number two, please exercise it, and the correct burden of proof is on the defendant, you know, or whatever. I mean, one could make up the rule. One could consider what rule ought to be applied.
The court should not remand the case because he ultimately made an unequivocal decision that a substantial likelihood is, quote, still just a substantial likelihood.
But why did you then in your brief cite this extra record document from Nigeria, which, as your opponent points out in the reply brief, is Exhibit A in the pantheon of corrupt countries, you know, to begin with, and some document from somebody we've never heard of, which has never been tested. I mean, if you thought there was really unequivocal ruling, you wouldn't have needed to put that in there.
Your Honor, that declaration that I cited in a footnote was new evidence received by the government after defendant
sentencing. It doesn't really count as evidence, right? It's not in the record. It's not, for all we know, this person was on somebody's payroll.
It is not in the record, Your Honor, and that's why I only refer to it in a footnote. However, if the government were to remand the case...
That answer, because it wasn't in the record, you put it in the footnote. I don't understand that.
I only cited it to bring it to the attention of the court.
What are we supposed to do with it? What is its legal significance?
Your Honor, the only legal significance at this time is something that the government...
Is your position that evidence that is not in the record can properly be used in footnotes to persuade the court to... Affirm? I don't understand that.
That is not the position of the government. I only mentioned it to bring to the court's attention that this is
what
something that the government
to
would
do?
Present
you
to the district court on remand.
To our attention that you want us to act on, presumably. Are we going to have a new jurisprudence of footnote references to extra record evidence?
Your Honor, I agree with you that the court cannot consider at this time the evidence that the district court could or could not hear on remand. Absent a showing that the district court misapplied or misunderstood the law, this court has no jurisdiction to review the denial of a downward departure. Without direct evidence to the contrary, this court presumes that a district court understood its discretion to depart and exercise that discretion.
Should we also assume that Judge Holderman understood the rules for appellate review of sentencing decisions?
I don't think that presumption should be made in this case, Your Honor.
I mean, if you've just told us that he understands the law.
Well, he understood
himself says, gee, I think the Court of Appeals should look at this.
she understood his discretion to depart. However, as for granting a defendant leave to appeal on the record and his mentioning that he would like to know what the Court of Appeals has to say, this shows a lack of understanding that his discretionary decision to deny a motion for a downward departure is not reviewable. However, the misstatements about appealability have no bearing on the critical point, which is that the judge exercised his discretion in declining to depart.
Well, that just gets to the nub of the problem. It starts with Judge Posner said, if you just say, I know I have discretion, and I'm going to exercise it in a way that denies departure, that's not too hard. I think it took me probably a second or two to say that. Why can't the district judges be required to do that?
Your Honor, I agree that it would have made all of our lives significantly easier if he had. However, he plainly stated that he did not depart, and he gave his reason, which was the separate sovereign analysis that Judge Wood mentioned earlier. And I agree with you, Judge Wood, that the separate sovereign law is not at dispute in this case. Judge Holderman, however, used that as the basis for his decision not to depart. He explicitly
had said the same thing and said, well, Illinois might do something about that, but I have no discretion to take Illinois' decision into account. We will all agree that that was flatly wrong, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. I believe that he expressly stated the laws of Nigeria, unless they violate international law, belong to Nigeria.
Just as the laws of Illinois, unless they bump into the Constitution, belong to Illinois, right? I mean, I'm just not so sure that there's, for this purpose, a significant difference.
I understand. However, he proceeded to state that this was not a factor that was expressly mentioned in the sentencing guidelines, but he did mention as part of his consideration sentencing guidelines section 5H1.10, which states that national origin is not relevant. This is Judge Holderman proceeding down the path that was dictated.
I found that a completely irrelevant reference, actually, to this problem. I don't see why national origin has the slightest bearing on this issue.
Well, I believe that to the extent that national origin has any bearing on deportation or consequences thereafter, Judge Holderman was taking that into consideration. He was doing the analysis dictated by the Supreme Court in Kuhn, that is, if a factor is unmentioned by the guidelines, the court must consider the structure and theory of the guidelines and decide whether the factor is sufficient to take the case out of the guidelines heartland. That is precisely what Judge Holderman did in this case. I see that my time is short. If the court has no further questions, I would respectfully ask that the government dismiss Amu's appeal for lack of jurisdiction.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Sorensen. Mr. Meyer. Well, let me ask you a question, Mr. Meyer.
I thought I was going to get away.
Yes, Judge.
Well, the government, when it opposed your motion for a downward departure, the government was quite explicit that it was arguing this as a matter of discretion. And what it said was it cited cases which said that court would not exercise its discretion unless the defendant had proved by a preponderance of the evidence that he would face these consequences in a foreign country. So Judge Holderman did say the defendant has not here proven it by a preponderance of the evidence.
Those were the words he used.
Then he goes on and he discusses these broader questions, but isn't that finding why wouldn't that finding indicate that he was agreeing with the government's argument for why discretion should not be exercised?
Although, the government made that argument, the judge did not refer to it in his ruling. I don't think.
Well, he's referring to what the government said is, Judge, as a matter of your discretion, citing other cases, you shouldn't downward depart on this ground unless the defendant proves by a preponderance of the evidence that he's going to be imprisoned in the other country. And isn't the judge responding to that when he says the defendant's not here proven it by a preponderance of the evidence? Then he goes on to discuss should the court ever take into account. And the implication, one might say, is that even if your client had proved by preponderance of the evidence that he'd be in prison in Nigeria, well, maybe even then it wouldn't be proper to grant a downward departure.
Well, as to your first question, Your Honor, although the government made that argument, Judge Holderman never referred to that, to the government's position in making its ruling. The judge independently looked at the evidence that the defendant submitted and said, you know, as I've argued before, there's a substantial likelihood that this will occur in Nigeria. And then went on to say the defendant has not met her burden by a preponderance of the evidence. That's where the record stands. Then the district court moved on into the analysis of whether it was a prohibited factor and whether the matter took the case out of the heartlands. Nowhere did he refer or mention the government's argument or state that he was exercising his discretion. In fact, whether or not a factor takes the case out of the heartlands is a legal determination that's subject to review by this court. And that's what Judge Holderman ruled, or one of his alternate rulings was.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you.
You were appointed, were you not?
Yes, I was.
Of course, thanks you for your efforts on this.